It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Guns it, caught, touchdown Atlanta in the end zone. Caught, touchdown, you shall not pass.
The 5 o'clock Falcons report.
Oh, my heavens.
On Dukes and Bell.
We are Dukes and Bell. We start off every day and every hour by saying, hey, man. Happy Monday, guys. Glad to be back off of vacation. Thank you for your kind words while I was there and enjoying myself in Jamaica, man.
Yeah, I'm on.
Red Stripe, Mike. Red Stripe Light. I tried the light, by the way, and I was like, why would I drink the light when I could have the Red Stripe?
Yeah, it's funny. By the time you get out of Jamaica, you're like, I'm never going to drink rum again.
Oh.
But that's been, you know, when in Rome or when in Ochi. Get it on.
No, no doubt. A lot of rum. Here's the thing, too. I got to ask this question. When you are on vacation, okay, and they have premium liquors, okay, who's drinking the Johnny Walker Black? It's hot as fire out here. Who is sipping on those scotches when it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon? I'm like, who's drinking this?
I love nothing I like better than getting my little skinny arms burning my pot belly. Can I get some of that? I sound like Mick. I'm sorry. No, an Australian, an Englishman would be like, those people generally will drink. They love the taste of Johnny Walker Black in a plastic cup
it's
at
crazy.
98-degree weather. Go figure.
I don't get it. I mean, at night, that's a little different. If I had a stogie, okay, but I'm like, who's out here in this hot-ass sun drinking scotch?
I've seen English do it. I'm with you, man. I'm just like, I will say there are some of the Appleton, like the 12 and 18-year-old Appleton you can drink neat, which are really yummy, man.
Yeah, those are really good. Hey, guys, we're going to get to the strong-arm story of the day here in about 10 minutes. Hawks have a big decision. A guy hit me up. He says, Dukes, you keep talking about hope. Listen, when you talk to people and they tell you, we hope this person is going to be good, that is the translation that we're not completely sold on him.
Right.
That other teams in the league are saying he has the potential, but there's a lot of hope there. I would be more inclined to go with a sure thing, a much more sure thing than hope. We'll get into it because the decision's going to come on Wednesday, and whether we keep the pick or not. By the way, as I mentioned on Wednesday, Mike Conti, Andy Bunker, and Steak Shapiro down at State Farm Arena, 7 to 10, they'll have you covered with all the live coverage after Mike and I get done. And then Thursday, Mike and I will be out at Hudson Grill downtown, and then on Friday, Twin Peaks in Buckhead.
Yeah, man, it was unbelievable, Carl. I was talking to some pictures of the Argentinians, and what a bananas crowd, Chris.
They were just in the street.
Yeah, I mean, they took over downtown. They marched in from Centennial Park. They took over, like, the grassy area between State Farm and the stadium and Mercedes-Benz. It was bananas. So this time, though, it's America. It's Team USA taking on Panama. So, yeah, man, we'll be out there, and we invite you guys. If you got tickets for the game, come on down. Join us. I believe the game starts early. I believe it's 6.
Okay. All right. Mike, let's talk about Michael Penix Jr. real quick. He signed his four-year $222 million deal. It's $222.8. $13 million is guaranteed. So bottom line is, and there's a picture of the Falcons. You know, they put it out there. We retweeted it. When are we going to see him? Listen, I'm all about Kirk Cousins, but you've been saying this, and I've been kind of in denial about this. If Michael Penix plays in the preseason and wows us, which I think he's going to, how soon does his clock start ticking? And when I say this, they're going to give Kirk Cousins all the time and ability and all the resources he needs to take this team to the Super Bowl. That is the goal this year. Let's not start this season thinking anything less. All of you told us last year we need a quarterback. Dukes and Bell, if we had a quarterback, Dukes and Bell, this team would be so much better if we had a quarterback. Well, we got one. But Penix signing his deal today, right, he officially becomes a Falcon, and we know this is like the last step. We got camp in about 4.5 weeks. But at the end of the day, this is a guy that was picked 8th overall, and Mike, you've said it, he's ready to play. I keep saying from a denial standpoint, he will get his turn. But what if he wows us?
Yeah, and this is why we joked around with Terry Fontenot. I said, no, you're going to have a quarterback contract. No, we're not. Remember that? We had that conversation right after the draft.
He cut you off.
And the thing is, there's things that become out of the team's control. Now, look, the coach decides who plays. We get that. You know, you and me and a bunch of fans losing our minds on social media is not going to get the Falcons to change what they do and how they prepare for
us. Well, Art did change quarterbacks after all that complaining last year.
He sure as hell did, didn't he? All I'm saying is you're going to have fans calling up to the fan base. If you don't see Cousins, Cousins, and Cousins' only chance to compete is coming in those controlled environments of the scrimmages where the teams were going to be playing in the preseason, and then Penix goes out there and lights it up and looks like a rock star. You got a lot of people calling in going, hey, man, let's go trade Kirk Cousins to so-and-so. They need a quarterback, and let's roll.
Yeah, you, obviously, we need to score more points.
Yes.
I mean, look, you guys think I'm just being a knucklehead? I'm on this, on the soul of my father, I see this train coming down the track. I'm telling you, it will happen.
He passed for 13,000 yards, 96 touchdowns, 34 interceptions. His touchdown interception rate, incredible in college.
You and I remember the game against Texas with him dropping those dimes.
Oh.
I'm excited. No disrespect to Cousins. He hasn't done anything wrong. I want to see Penix.
Well, and that gets us to we will. And when we do, part of this is let the excitement build. I mean, think about this from a Falcon standpoint and a Falcon fan standpoint. When's the last time you knew something was coming and you were excited about it?
Right, with this team.
When? You know this is coming. We don't know when. I need Kirk Cousins to be healthy all year, and I'm knocking on this faux wood in here, whatever the hell this countertop is. We need him to be, because we need that. We need his experience. We need that this season. All I'm saying is, as I look at Penix signing his deal, and he's got a big smile on his face, and a guy hit me up and says, Dukes, this guy's going to be good. We hope so. But this gets me excited about what's coming. And I just got to be honest with you. It's been a long time since I've been excited about what's coming. What's sitting there, Mike, waiting to be seen. And we're like, man, you know what? Look at what we got.
Right. Well, no, I mean, 2 years ago, you were funny because you're like, oh, Mariota will be good. No, Mariota sucks. And
yes.
The ceiling. I mean, we all knew. I mean, Mariota gave you exactly what we told you he was going to give you, which is mediocrity. And it drove us crazy.
And they gave him way too much time.
Just drove you crazy. And, I mean, let's go see what you have with Ritter. And then we were trying to sell a little bit of sunshine and hope. So you just talk about hope with Hawks.
We hadn't seen him.
Right. And we're just hoping. Hey, look, Arthur Smith knows what he's doing. If he feels only one series in preseason is what he needs. And he wasn't ready. And the moment was too big for him on a number of occasions. But now this year, if Cousins, like we know what Cousins is. Cousins, statistically, regular season, will put up 30 touchdowns and just shy of 4,500. That's what he does.
He does.
Now, what he does in the playoffs, we can debate how much that is up on him or up beyond his control, what the team was he's played on. But we know what we're going to get. And you just talked about Penix. Penix, I think a lot of folks feel is ready. I think a number of teams were scared by the medical.
Yeah.
And that's why we could have just simply drafted him. The Giants were not interested. They're on the record. They were never interested in Penix. The only team we would have had to worry about was the Giants. So we could have hung out and just taken him and spent that money on a defense, which we still need. Defense is more of a question for me than the offense. I think I know what this offense is going to be, brother, because all the reasons we just talked about.
Yeah.
Weapons, speed, versatility, Bijan, Algier, a healthy Pitts. Offense is not going to be the problem. It's going to be the pass rush.
Yeah. The other problem with that, though, Mike, is we don't know who made calls to potentially move up and try to get the Giants pick or get in front of us. We stayed put. Remember the report we talked about? Who was it that wanted to make a trade with? Oh, it was the Bears. Bears wanted – they wanted to switch picks with us. And we weren't even willing to do that, even though we weren't interested in Odunze.
And they already had – yeah, because Odunze is kind of like Drake London as far as the skill set, the way he you know, he's his comp. So I just felt – look, if you feel that Penix – this was the argument at the time. If Penix is – you love him that much, just go – yeah, then give up a first-round pick from 2025 and go get on with your life if it came to that. But it was never going to come to that,
yeah.
I don't think.
Well, listen – That die has been cast, right?
Okay, here we are.
Here
but I
we
want to
are.
See Penix. I'm looking forward to seeing Penix. The guys he's throwing to, great quote today at the Falcons website. This story came out today. Talking about the wide receiver room we're just mentioning.
Yep.
Talking about for Drake London and how much they're working on their footwork and getting off the line. All the speed and the elements that they've added. You already talked about, you know, we got Ray Ray. And we've got, you know, who is it? Who's your guy? Darnell Mooney.
What's up, Darnell?
So, last year we talked about Van Jefferson was nothing special. Mac Hollins was nothing special.
No.
Now we've got a different type of wide receiver room. But the quote from Drake is great. Slow feet don't eat. So, you got to have fast feet. Can't argue with that.
I think he's going to have a great season. I think we've upgraded this wide receiver room. But to be honest with you guys, it's the guy that hasn't played well the last 2 years because of injuries is the secret sauce. And that's Kyle Pitts. I mean... when you ask me who needs to be the leading receiver in 2024, I would tell you it should be Pitts. Because, Mike, with his size and speed, he creates mismatches for you all over the field. Mm. We talked about this when we had Mohamed Sanu. And Sanu is a great dude, but he used to tell us, like, you put a linebacker on me, he's too slow. Put a corner on me, he's too small. That's how I feel about Pitts. put him in those positions and let him line up and go catch the ball over guys or outrun guys. And that's why I feel like he should be the leading receiver. I'm not telling you Drake London's not going to have 1,000 yards. Guys, to be a great team, you need multiple great players. Mm-hmm. You need guys to exceed expectations. Hell, it wouldn't surprise me if London had 1,000 and Pitts had 1,000 and Bijan had 75 balls that he caught for 600 or 700 yards. That's what you need when you start talking about having a special team, Mike.
Right. Now, again, Rondale Moore, apparently he's a 4.29 guy coming out of college. We talked about Darnell Mooney being a legitimate 4.3 guy. So we've got all these dudes. Now we've got to put them to work. The question I'm interested in, when we spoke with Zach Robinson back in February, does he think Pitts is the guy that can be the traditional tight end who does the stuff that Kittle does, where he's blocking? Now, Kelsey doesn't do as much of that in their offense.
No.
But or is he going to just let him freelance and just be that the unicorn, right? That like what Tony Gonzalez was. That to me is going to be interesting, because we always yelled at Arthur Smith literally in the interviews. Look, if Pitts can't block, don't ask him to freaking block.
Yeah, and we had nine tight ends. We had like nine tight ends on the roster too.
Right. Yeah. Now, how much of that was on his? Maybe he wasn't as effective because of the injury.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's possible. You guys can let us know what you think as Penix signs his deal, and more importantly, you know, when we talk about the production as we count down the start of training camp. Everybody's wondering this because they're looking at our wide receiver room and they're going, hey, that looks good on paper. Okay, they can all make a case, but I know who better show up. It's Kyle Pitts. This hour is brought to you by All Four Seasons Garage and Entry Doors. It's Dukes and Bell. We're coming back. We've been talking about the Hawks today, and it's got people fired up simply because everybody feels like you know what they're going to do. I don't even know if they know what they want to do, and we're 2 days away. But I think they like a guy more than the others. We'll talk about it next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Strong Arm Story of the Day is brought to you by John Foyt Associates Personal Injury Law.
What are the Hawks going to do with the draft just 2 days away? It's Dukes and Bell, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. NBA draft coverage right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Mike, one of the questions is, you know, free agency is going to happen after the draft. But the big question, there are really two. One, what do we do with the first overall pick? And then the second question is, as free agency starts, you know, early July, what happens with all these trade rumors that are out there? And everybody's just under the assumption that the Hawks are going to move on from one or either star, all right, or potentially both, which I think is unrealistic, when you talk about Trae Young and DeJounte Murray. And so it's part of the discussion today, only because if you are going to do that, you better know before going into this draft how that's going to affect the team and how you are trying to team build. If you're not going to do that, then, Mike, you can look at this completely different. Whether it's Sarr or Richache, whoever you want to add, and I think Zachary Richache is going to be the guy. That's where I'm at right now. If you feel like, hey, we add this to what we have, how much better are we? Instead of thinking about it from a subtraction standpoint. Right. But part of this is, man, you look at the cap, Mike, we're over the cap right now.
Well, that's the thing that Chris and I, we had a big discussion. We were up at State Farm Arena on Friday getting ready for the Caitlin Clark show. And it's just, you know, look, there's nothing that says wrestler can't go spend and get into luxury tax and try to maybe, you know, fix this thing and you know, do more than just tweak it. I mean, maybe try to bring somebody in. Here's the other thing. Do guys want to play with Trey? I'm not trying to go down that Trey personality. It just is what it is. Can we get guys who want to come here? You know, Siakam would have been a nice fit here. He just signed a big deal with Indiana. You need size. And that's why the Sarr thing comes back to me. But they don't maybe like Sarr like we think they should like Sarr.
Right.
So you got to get Capella off the books. He's given us the best years of his career. But it's and there's other teams still interested in him. So you can find a trade partner. But it seems to me, Carl, you're going to have to spend a little bit to do this on the cheap and just to simply accumulate picks. So what? Picks we're going to use when? To do what? That's why I think the only way to fix this is to spend money, but I just can't see them doing that.
Yeah.
And you said earlier, you're just not going to get the haul you think you're going to get. Certainly not for DeJounte. The only thing that gets you a haul is Trey, but it might be down the road. You know, number one pick here, number one pick there.
Yeah. Let's talk about this real quick about playing with Trey, because again, all of this affects your decision on Wednesday night. I know you may not see it that way, but if you feel like, and I'm not saying Mike and I, but if they feel like, hey, this is a fundamental issue, we have an issue on the team or whatever, however you might see this, Mike, so he's got to be the guy that we're going to move on from. Well, then that affects how you draft. That affects how you look at this. Now, some of you are just saying, well, take the best player. Well, there's no definitive best player at the top of the draft. Well, you will hear me say that for the next 2 days, the next 48 hours until we draft at 8 o'clock on Wednesday night. But the fact of the matter is, you still have to get it right. The Hawks, if they keep this pick, and Mike, we draft a bum, and who doesn't help us in 3 years,
right,
we're still going to be killing them and saying, what was this organization thinking?
I'm a big fan of a happy end.
You had the first overall pick.
Right.
You still have to find the right guy that fits with what you're trying to do. So this is not like La La Land easy decision, guys, especially when you don't have a clear-cut guy at the top of the draft. I just think if you feel like, hey, we can make this Trey and DeJounte thing work and we're going to go add to it, that's one thought, a train of thought. The other is one of these guys is gone, and how do we supplement that?
Right. Well, that's just it, because you and I, you just said, okay, maybe there's no way to get DeJounte off the – like, Trey and him get along great. They just don't exist in the you nailed this 2 years ago. Two ball-dominant guards don't coexist unless one is willing to move without the ball. Trey has never been – guys, what? All you Trey fans out there, what part of that is a lie? What lie has been told? Trey has never acquiesced to DeJounte running the show. He moves without the ball. He gets the open look. He hits the three. That's what we thought it was – that's what Nate was selling when they made this trade. Never happened. So I'm glad they're boys. They don't coexist. So, all right, so you're telling me we're going to run this back because we can't get the good trade equity to get the deal done. You got to then spend. You got to go get some size. You got to get a D and three guy.
Yes.
And the only way you do that is by wrestling. That's why we're right back to how we started this conversation, wrestling getting back in the luxury tax, which you won't do.
404-726-0929. What do you guys think? How are you feeling right now?
You're bringing back Sadiq Bey? Is he coming with a Groupon?
I think he's a restricted free agent. Mm-hmm. They have a chance to do that. If you feel like he's going to come back off this injury, Mike, again, there are a lot of things I like about Sadiq Bey. And, guys, he's 25. He's not 30. So
Trey is so young, too.
Yes. If you feel like, all right, you know what? And we've seen Sadiq. He's got a great body for the NBA. If you feel like he's going to come back off this injury, Mike, I think that is a guy that might be a keeper. The pieces that I need to see gone, and you know this already, Hunter?
Yeah.
Capella. And then how are you replacing those pieces? I think you get more athletic with the big, like Richaché, Mike, 6'9", 6'10", wingspan. I feel like he's more offensively gifted right now with where he's at 18. He'll be 19, I think, by the time the season starts or whatever. Either way, than where Clint Capella is.
Right. And then go, you know, if you like I know you still think Okongwu's got more ceiling. I think it's as good as it gets with him. But
I do.
Then maybe in the second round, do we have a second round pick?
Well, because
no, we don't.
Well, because here's the deal.
I'm saying go get one of those guys with like one eyebrow from Europe.
Yes,
you know,
but you've got 00, right? Okongwu. You've got. Let's just say we draft one of these guys who, you know, 6'9", 6'10". Pick your guy. Okay, I'm talking about Richaché, but it could be Sar, whatever. And then you still have Mike, you know, in that mix, Jalen Johnson. So you're talking about three young athletic guys. Here's the other thing that can all defend. That's the other part of this. When we start talking about this draft, it's not we don't need offense, guys. We can score.
We just said, what does Boston have? Everything we don't have.
You need guys that can defend.
Exactly. They got size, you know, poisoning, everything we don't have. Role players like Al Horford, gritty defenders, you know, like Drew Holiday. And we don't have any of that. We haven't played a lick of defense. Nate couldn't get him to play defense. Yep. Quinn Snyder can't get him to play defense.
Yeah.
The only time they play defense when the G League guys are out there with DeJounte, when Trey was injured. But then those guys don't score enough points against the good teams.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Oh, yes, you do. Stop it. 404-726-0929. Here's what's crazy about, you know, if, in fact, you could maybe add in this draft that kind of athleticism and defense, Mike, and then maybe you go get I don't know. I mean, who we been talking about? Maybe the Pelicans. Who am I thinking about? Brandon Ingram.
Yes.
Bring in Brandon Ingram.
Great defender.
It changes your whole team, Mike. Now you've got flexibility across the board with bigs that can play, and you've got guys that can defend 1 through 4. Like, you got to be thinking about all this stuff. Right. It's not just, oh, we're going to trade Trey and we're going to be great next year. Like, that's foolish, and that's why I'm not necessarily for it. If we went through another season where all these guys, and maybe it doesn't happen, but, Mike, they weren't healthy. JJ was hurt. Trey missed damn near 2.5, 3 months. You've got to figure out whether this can truly work, and if we went through another season and it doesn't, guys, clean house, fine, move on, but we're not there.
So this gets back to, do you feel, you know, as a fan, what have we been missing? We need toughness. We need physicality. Yes. We need a rim protector. That's Sarr. I mean, to me, so I know, again, I don't know why he had that look on his face when the ping pong balls or the Atlanta got number one. He looked like he didn't want to be here. I don't understand that. We have not, there's not a lot of stories that say he's linked to Atlanta, but we need size. So, and then what do you make of the Klingon thing? The kid from UConn,
he's
who apparently
big.
Is Quentin. You and I have read the same stuff. Apparently Snyder likes him. He's got a little more experience because he's played in some big games in college for UConn. He is 7'2". He's a big boy.
Yeah, and here's the deal. You don't think Dan Hurley's going to give you a full analysis of what these guys were or are? I think that's a phone call from Quentin Snyder or anybody in the front office saying, Dan, tell me about this kid. He's tough. We know that.
Yeah. But Chris just said in my ear, his career high in college is 13 points.
Yeah.
You're getting defense, right?
Well,
you're getting defense?
Well, I don't know if you're getting defense. I think the part for me with him is the comp is Marc Gasol. Is that good enough for you? And
that's at his best.
I don't know if he comes in at that.
Yeah, your hope. That's what
his best.
That's why I said Jaren Jackson from the Memphis Grizzlies. For Reece Hoshea, they compare him again if he pans out to be, you know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander type, which is what you like. That's the new NBA, right?
Yeah. I mean, here's the deal. Apparently, and I have not seen this kid play. This is all just information that was provided. But Mike, he's got step back game. He's got jumpers. His offensive game right now is good. He is a guy that's very skilled. It's why I think teams really dig him. And everybody's playing this game like, well, if he gets number one, it'll be a surprise. Well, whatever.
But, I mean, Chris, we're talking in my ear while we're just talking about this draft pick. Klingon, the kid who just won a national championship back with UConn, this could be the greatest bust for the Hawks since John Konkak.
Oh, jeez.
Because this guy doesn't score. And he's not an elite defender. I mean, or is he? Is he consider him as a body? I mean, that's what gets us back to the Paul Pierce comments last week. That we finally get the freaking number one pick. There's not even remotely close to a guy who's a consensus overall number one.
Yeah.
A lot of guys said, why don't you just, you know, if you're going to keep DeJounte and Trey, go get a big and let's do some pick and roll.
That's it. This is where I'm at. Like, how can we be the most effective? And here, by the way, that's not all. We need to draft, and then I'm being serious. Then you got to go get that other kind of player in some kind of trade. One way or the other, that adds some veteran presence, Mike, some scoring and some defense to your team, and then you hope you get Bay back, and you hope Double O is healthy, and all these things that we talked about, and now the team looks a little bit different.
I mean, but the money, the dollars.
It really
where's
is.
It coming from?
Coming up, we're going to talk to Grant McCauley. Hey, Braves went to New York, handled business, but now they've got to go to St. Louis, and it doesn't get any easier. We'll talk to Grant McCauley next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Around the yard with your Atlanta Braves on Dukes and Bell. Brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Get a guaranteed offer on your home today.
He gets greeted rudely by Ronald Acuna Jr. It is gone!
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
All right, Grant McCauley, not a bad road trip considering how they finished with the Yankees. They won 8 of their last 10. We're talking about our Braves who take 2 of 3 from the Yankees. How would you describe this transition of moving in the right direction? Because I feel so much better about this team than I did about 2.5, 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely momentum, and it's what the Braves have been looking for, especially at the plate, to have more games than not where they're able to come through and, flex their muscles, show that power, hit those home runs, but also just be able to, put enough up there so that you're feeling like this is a club that is capable of scoring runs in bunches again. And I do feel like that they have found that really beginning on this past homestand, maybe that final game in Baltimore, there's a little bit of movement in that direction as well. But as you mentioned, winners of 8 out of 10, getting that momentum going, their feet under them offensively. And what this pitching staff continues to do, it's just starting to, it feels like, click, even though I'm sure there's a few guys that would like to take a step or two beyond what they've been able to do as far as trending is concerned here lately.
I know, Grant, we talked a lot about the leadoff position because, Michael Harris just wasn't as effective before he got injured, and Ozzie's not really good in that role. He's great at batting two. You got the guy, mm-hmm. Jared Kelnick. I know you put the stats out there today. 10-game hitting streak, slugging's up, on base, hitting home runs. It looks like he fits.
Wait, did you say Jared Kelnick?
That's, again, Jared Kelnick.
Oh, okay. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, you may recall, if we want to get into the archives here on the show, that I was mentioning when Ronald Acuña Jr. went down that as you start to figure out who might profile as a leadoff hitter, yes, you can look at Michael Harris, and yes, you can look at Ozzie Albies, and both of those guys have done it some in their career, Harris more so at the minor league level than the big league level, and yeah, with the speed, those guys make sense as well, but I pointed this out. You know, if Jared Kelnick gets going, he would be a guy, because he runs extremely well, that you could look at in this spot. Now, the way that this opportunity has come to Jared Kelnick is the worst possible way that it could, because you have the injury to Ronald Acuña Jr., the further injury to Michael Harris II. So you had to figure out something. And the way that he has been hitting really over the last 27 games, batting just under 300, OPSing just under 900, the power has shown up. He's playing some good center field as well. Just a little bit of everything. And he runs the base as well. And it just feels like that all the work that he did in spring training, where sure, the numbers didn't say that it was clicking, it's begun to click here in the season. He's made further tweaks late last month. I think in Chicago, he just changed hands work in. And the next thing you know, we're seeing the kind of numbers that we are. 10-game hitting streak overall, hit safely in every game since moving to the leadoff spot. He is one of the reasons why I think the Braves offense is starting to hit its stride.
It is Grant McCauley, guys, joining us here as he does, as we go around the yard. Tell us about the injury. Mike and I, we were talking about this a little bit earlier, I guess, to Kerr. Is that right? And what that means for this Braves team, as you know, the projections for him and the future. What's it look like?
Well, it takes an option off the table, and obviously they haven't necessarily gotten into what type of UCL injury it is, but when you hear that phrase and hear that particular ailment being brought up, that there's a UCL problem, typically we know what that can oftentimes lead to, and that, of course, is ligament replacement surgery. But we'll await word on that. But what it does is it takes a left-handed option off the table. I know he had been sent back down to the minor leagues just under a week ago, so he wasn't on the big league roster right now, but once they found out that maybe there's an injury going on, the right thing to do, obviously, was, hey, did you suffer this injury the last time you pitched in the major leagues? Much like Hurston Waldrop, if there's something wrong, got to put him on the injury list. Don't want to be optioning these guys back down, because there's reasons for how you manage your roster and why you need to do it that way. But not a lot of detail that I can give you right now until we really know the extent of all of it. But certainly it takes away a player who, in a bullpen that didn't have very many pieces you could option, it takes him away from the Braves. But perhaps they get A.J. Minter back in the next few days. I went up to Rome this weekend. I caught up with A.J. He said he felt good. Braves sent him to AAA Gwinnett to make at least one more rehab appearance. But he said, hey, I'll be ready to join the club whenever they decide it is. But whatever I got to do to get there is what I'm going to do right now. But it looks like his hip ailment that he was dealing with has subsided, and he's feeling a lot better.
I know we spent a lot of time talking about why we didn't give a contract and that ship has sailed. Now, I think for Max Fried, do you agree there's no way Max Fried is back next year under whatever numbers you think, whether it's more than Aaron Nola? I saw some projections there. They said it'd be like north of like $190 million.
I don't know what that's going to look like. I mean, clearly, if you take the Aaron Nola contract, you take the Carlos Rodon contract, some of the others that pitchers have gotten that are around his age that do get the free agency. And obviously his resume speaks for itself, and what he's doing this year is a huge reason why the Braves rotation has been as good as it has. But yeah, I don't feel like we're in the place where I would say, yeah, good time for an extension. Mm-hmm. I think we've kind of reached the point where, free agency seems to be the most likely outcome for this. But once he gets there, will he get that deal? Will he find the years and the money? Mm-hmm. You really got to just get a couple of teams interested, and maybe you could have yourself a bidding war. But I do think the Braves will be obviously interested in retaining his services. But once you hit the open market, as we've seen for the last few winters, everything changes because other teams can then get involved.
Grant, talk about St. Louis. I mean, this is another good test, isn't it?
I mean, it's a club that's been playing better lately, but I feel like just looking at them, and they are over 500 in a division that's certainly not decided yet. The Brewers have been the front runners, but they haven't salted away and put away the division just yet. And the Braves actually, I believe, come into today with a better record than the NL Central leading Brewers, if I looked at the standings right, I believe, late last night. But putting that aside, the Cardinals, I think four games over, they've got some veteran pitchers who have looked pretty good, but offensively speaking, they're still trying to sort some stuff out. Paul Goldschmidt, Nolan Arenado, they're a year older, and I think that that's starting to become something that you at least have to look at and think, all right, well, maybe they're not the same player that they used to be in each of those cases. But, you know, this is a club that does find a way to win, and, you know, as you face clubs that are over 500 and trending in the right direction and fighting to keep their momentum going, it could be a pretty good test for the Braves. They'll see Lance Lynn in the opener, and they'll see, I believe, Kyle Gibson in Game 2, and I don't think that they have named a starter for Game 3 just yet. But the Braves are going to go out with the rookie Spencer Schwellenbach. You'll see Ronaldo Lopez in the series, Chris Sale in the series. So it lines up pretty well with three Braves starters who have been throwing some pretty good baseball here lately. And really for Sale and Lopez, that's been the story all season.
Grant, I know that Orlando Arcia is having, like so many of the Braves throughout the course of this year, a real big struggle at the plate. His glove makes up for some of those shortcomings, but a lot of Braves fans are saying it's time for some Nacho!
Uh-oh!
Nacho Alvarez.
Uh-oh!
When will we see Nacho? Because, and by the way, I'm not having buyer's remorse on Arcia because Dansby's horrible this year in Chicago, but when are we going to see some Nacho?
Well, you're also paying Orlando Arcia what amounts to about $2 million a year. I mean, that extension was a steal, even if he only served as a utility man, you know, and just helped out at short and second and third as you needed him to. Don't put him in the outfield, though, because I think we all saw that that was not really a place where he was going to excel. But, you know, putting all that aside, I mean, the decision to let Dansby Swanson go was one that was based on a lot of monetary factors and the fact that the Cubs came in with an offer far beyond what the Braves were ever going to spend on Dansby Swanson. But as far as Alvarez goes, I mean, you keep hitting like this. He's already made it up to AAA, has hit extremely well there. I don't know if he's a profile as a shortstop long-term, but he's certainly capable of playing the position. And there's not really, you know, somewhere else in the Braves infield that you're looking at a vacancy or a job that's unsettled and somebody's not signed for the next 3, 4, 5, 10 years, whatever the case is. It would be interesting to see him get that chance. I know Arcia's glove means a lot. I know as a teammate, Orlando Arcia is kind of a valuable part of what the Braves do every day. But if you look at his offensive numbers, they have fallen off a cliff here after the first 3, 4 weeks of the year. He's not alone in that respect, but at some point you'd like to get a little bit more production out of him. But I said this on From the Diamond, and I stand by this. When the rest of the Braves lineup is producing, you don't spend a lot of time worrying about Orlando Arcia's production because what he's doing is typically enough, and he's usually toward the bottom of the order. But when nobody's hitting, everyone's individual struggles are going to be under a microscope with a spotlight on top of that, and it's hard to hide the numbers for Orlando. They've been pretty rough the past 6, 7 weeks.
The yard with your Atlanta Braves on Dukes and Bell. Brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Get a guaranteed offer on your home today.
He gets greeted rudely by Ronald Acuna Jr. It is gone.
Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
All right, Grant McCauley, not a bad road trip considering how they finished with the Yankees. They won 8 of the last 10. We're talking about our Braves who take 2 of 3 from the Yankees. How would you describe this transition of moving in the right direction? Because that's, I feel so much better about this team than I did about 2.5, 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely momentum, and it's what the Braves have been looking for, especially at the plate, to have more games than not where they're able to come through and, yeah, flex their muscle, show that power, hit those home runs, but also just be able to, you know, put enough up there so that you're feeling like this is a club that is capable of scoring runs in bunches again. And I do feel like that they have found that really beginning on this past homestand, maybe that final game in Baltimore, there's a little bit of movement in that direction as well. But as you mentioned, winners of 8 out of 10, getting that momentum going, their feet under them offensively. And what this pitching staff continues to do, it's just starting to, it feels like, click, even though I'm sure there's a few guys that would like to take a step or two beyond what they've been able to do as far as trending is concerned here lately.
I know, Grant, we talked a lot about the leadoff position because, you know, Michael Harris just wasn't as effective before he got injured, and Ozzie's not really good in that role. He's great at batting, too. You got the guy, Jared Kelnick. I know you put the stats out there today, 10-game hitting streak, slugging's up, on base, hitting home runs. It looks like he fits.
Wait, did you say Jared Kelnick?
That's, again, Jared Kelnick.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, you may recall, if we want to get into the archives here on the show, that I was mentioning when Ronald Acuna Jr. went down that as you start to figure out who might profile as a leadoff hitter, yes, you can look at Michael Harris, and yes, you can look at Ozzie Albies, and both of those guys have done it some in their career, Harris more so at the minor league level than the big league level, and yeah, with the speed, those guys make sense as well, but I pointed this out. You know, if Jared Kelnick gets going, he would be a guy, because he runs extremely well, that you could look at in this spot. Now, the way that this opportunity has come to Jared Kelnick is the worst possible way that it could, because you had the injury to Ronald Acuna Jr., the further injury to Michael Harris II. So you had to figure out something. And the way that he has been hitting really over the last 27 games, batting just under 300, OPSing just under 900, the power has shown up. He's playing some good center field as well. Just a little bit of everything. And he runs the base as well. And it just feels like that all the work that he did in spring training, where sure, the numbers didn't say that it was clicking, it's begun to click here in the season. He's made further tweaks late last month. I think in Chicago, he just changed hands were again. And the next thing you know, we're seeing the kind of numbers that we are. 10-game hitting streak overall, hit safely in every game since moving to the leadoff spot. He is one of the reasons why I think the Braves offense is starting to hit its stride.
It is Grant McCauley, guys, joining us here as he does, as we go around the yard. Tell us about the injury. Mike and I, we were talking about this a little bit earlier, I guess, to Kerr. Is that right? And what that means for this Braves team, as, you know, the projections for him and the future. What's it look like?
Well, it takes an option off the table, and obviously they haven't necessarily gotten into what type of UCL injury it is, but when you hear that phrase and hear that particular ailment being brought up, that there's a UCL problem, typically we know what that can oftentimes lead to, and that, of course, is ligament replacement surgery. But we'll await word on that. But what it does is it takes a left-handed option off the table. I know he had been sent back down to the minor leagues just under a week ago, so he wasn't on the big league roster right now, but once they found out that maybe there's an injury going on, the right thing to do, obviously, was, hey, did you suffer this injury the last time you pitched in the major leagues? Much like Hurston Waldrop, if there's something wrong, got to put him on the injury list. Don't want to be optioning these guys back down, because there's reasons for how you manage your roster and why you need to do it that way. But not a lot of detail that I can give you right now until we really know the extent of all of it. But certainly it takes away a player who, you know, in a bullpen that didn't have very many pieces you could option, it takes him away from the Braves. But perhaps they get A.J. Minter back in the next few days. I went up to Rome this weekend. I caught up with A.J. He said he felt good. Braves sent him to AAA Gwinnett to make at least one more rehab appearance. But he said, hey, I'll be ready to join the club whenever they decide it is. But whatever I got to do to get there is what I'm going to do right now. But it looks like his hip ailment that he was dealing with has subsided, and he's feeling a lot better.
I know we spent a lot of time talking about why we didn't give a contract and that ship has sailed. Now, I think for Max Fried, do you agree there's no way Max Fried is back next year under whatever numbers you think, whether it's more than Aaron Nola? I saw some projections there. They said it'd be like north of like $190 million.
I mean, I don't know what that's going to look like. I mean, clearly, if you take the Aaron Nola contract, you take the Carlos Rodon contract, some of the others that, you know, pitchers have gotten that are around his age that do get the free agency. And obviously his resume speaks for itself, and what he's doing this year is a huge reason why the Braves rotation has been as good as it has. But yeah, I mean, I don't feel like we're in the place where I would say, yeah, good time for an extension. Mm-hmm. I think we've kind of reached the point where, you know, free agency seems to be the most likely outcome for this. But once he gets there, will he get that deal? Will he find the years and the money? Mm-hmm. You really got to just get a couple of teams interested, and maybe you could have yourself a bidding war. But I do think the Braves will be obviously interested in retaining his services. But once you hit the open market, as we've seen for the last few winters, everything changes because other teams can then get involved.
Grant, talk about St. Louis. I mean, this is another good test, isn't it?
I mean, it's a club that's been playing better lately, but I feel like just looking at them, and they are over 500 in a division that's certainly not decided yet. The Brewers have been the front runners, but they haven't salted away and put away the division just yet. And the Braves actually, I believe, come into today with a better record than the NL Central leading Brewers, if I looked at the standings right, I believe, late last night. But putting that aside, the Cardinals, I think four games over, they've got some veteran pitchers who have looked pretty good, but offensively speaking, they're still trying to sort some stuff out. Paul Goldschmidt, Nolan Arenado, they're a year older, and I think that that's starting to become something that you at least have to look at and think, all right, well, maybe they're not the same player that they used to be in each of those cases. But, you know, this is a club that does find a way to win. And, you know, as you face clubs that are over 500 and trending in the right direction and fighting to keep their momentum going, it could be a pretty good test for the Braves. They'll see Lance Lynn in the opener, and they'll see, I believe, Kyle Gibson in Game 2. And I don't think that they have named a starter for Game 3 just yet. But the Braves are going to go out with the rookie Spencer Schwellenbach. You'll see Ronaldo Lopez in the series, Chris Sale in the series. So it lines up pretty well with three Braves starters who have been throwing some pretty good baseball here lately. And really for Sale and Lopez, that's been the story all season.
Grant, I know that Orlando Arcia is having, like so many of the Braves throughout the course of this year, a real big struggle at the plate. His glove makes up for some of those shortcomings, but a lot of Braves fans are saying it's time for some Nacho!
Uh-oh!
Nacho Alvarez. When will we see Nacho? Because, and by the way, I'm not having buyer's remorse on Arcia because Dansby's horrible this year in Chicago, but when are we going to see some Nacho?
Well, you're also paying Orlando Arcia what amounts to about $2 million a year. I mean, that extension was a steal, even if he only served as a utility man, you know, and just helped out at short and second and third as you needed him to. Don't put him in the outfield, though, because I think we all saw that that was not really a place where he was going to excel. But, you know, putting all that aside, I mean, the decision to let Dansby Swanson go was one that was based on a lot of monetary factors and the fact that the Cubs came in with an offer far beyond what the Braves were ever going to spend on Dansby Swanson. But as far as Alvarez goes, I mean, you keep hitting like this. He's already made it up to AAA, has hit extremely well there. I don't know if he's a profile as a shortstop long-term, but he's certainly capable of playing the position. And there's not really, you know, somewhere else in the Braves infield that you're looking at a vacancy or a job that's unsettled and somebody's not signed for the next 3, 4, 5, 10 years, whatever the case is. It would be interesting to see him get that chance. I know Arcia's glove means a lot. I know as a teammate, Orlando Arcia is kind of a valuable part of what the Braves do every day. But if you look at his offensive numbers, they have fallen off a cliff here after the first 3, 4 weeks of the year. He's not alone in that respect, but at some point you'd like to get a little bit more production out of him. But I said this on From the Diamond, and I stand by this. When the rest of the Braves lineup is producing, you don't spend a lot of time worrying about Orlando Arcia's production because what he's doing is typically enough, and he's usually toward the bottom of the order. But when nobody's hitting, everyone's individual struggles are going to be under a microscope with a spotlight on top of that, and it's hard to hide the numbers for Orlando. They've been pretty rough the past 6, 7 weeks.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.